Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Let's go.
Welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon from iHeartRadio. Your pop culture news, views, reviews, and celebrity interviews on all the movies, TV, music, and pop culture you crave weekly. Here's Kyle McMahon.
Hello. Welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon. I, of course, am Kyle McMahon, and it is episode 76 of Pop Culture Weekly. I cannot believe it. And you guys allow this show to grow every single week, and I love you for it. Please, please keep, it really means a lot if you could review the show on Apple Podcasts and share it with a friend. Those two things are huge to the show continuing to grow. So please, thank you for doing that. And if you haven't, please do it. So in this week's show, it's an all-interview show, we have Joe Keery, Stranger Things' very own Steve Harrington from Stranger Things. And for this episode, we are talking about his role in Free Guy, which I absolutely love. The movie is so much fun. It's so funny. It's got a great message. It's just really, really a great film, and I know you're going to love it. And please, when you see it, let me know what you think. So I talked to Joe. Then I talked to Savannah Welch, which she's in the country band The Trishas. But we are talking today about her role as Barbara Gordon in Titans on HBO Max. So season 3 of Titans is exclusively an HBO Max series, and she plays a very, very big role in, obviously, not just DC Comics lore over 75 years, but in Titans itself. Barbara Gordon, of course, in the comics is Batgirl and was injured by the Joker, and there's a whole long history behind it, but that's who she plays. We have a really, really, really great conversation. It gets much deeper than I expected it to, but she's so inspirational, and I can't wait for you to hear that. Then finally, on this week's show, I talk with the one and only Lori Tan Chin, who is so freaking funny as Grandma on the show Awkwafina is Nora from Queens. She is hysterically funny. You also may know her as Mei Chang on Orange is the New Black, but we have a great discussion about, and I loved her on Roseanne. That was one of my favorite shows, even though Roseanne and I had a big falling out and she blocked me, but she played Iris on Roseanne. But anyway, she plays Nora's grandmother on Awkwafina is Nora from Queens. She is hysterically funny. So we talk about her career, about the series, and about, Asian representation in Hollywood today. So very, very cool discussion that I think you'll love. So without further ado, let's get in to the first interview, Joe Keery. Hey, Joe, thanks so much for speaking with me. I appreciate it.
What's up, Kyle? How's it going?
I'm doing well, thank you. I saw Free Guy, and I absolutely loved it. It's like a explosion of comedy and fun and feel good in there, too. And
good.
Your character, and I'm trying to think of how to say this non-spoilerly, your character is, how would you describe Keys?
Sure. I'm trying to think about it in a non-spoiler way too. I think that I got to actually do a lot of kind of the emotional backbone of the project. Obviously, my character is a coder, video game designer, partners or former partners with Millie, who is Jody's character. And we create this game together and then end up selling it to a company and thinking that, you know, our dreams have come true. But then they shelf that title, the game that we made, and which is very disappointing. And then I end up just working this kind of dead end job at this company that I don't really respect. So I really love that I get to start up, you know, start the project, or at least my character starts in this kind of depressed, disappointed place, you know, and then that's just a real nice springboard for the rest of the movie. So yeah, it was a different challenge for me, which was really fun.
And that's actually was the next thing I was going to ask you. This is a bit of a different role in many ways. Were you nervous at all about going into a role like this? Or were you just like, I can't wait to do it? What was that like?
Excited mostly. I mean, I was nervous about maybe the circumstances more just because you're working with actors who you admire. And but I was confident working with Sean. And, you know, we've got kind of a shorthand at this point after working on the show for a while. But yeah, I think every actor just wants to kind of do something different. So when presented with a, you know, a character who's coming from a different place, I was just really excited to, go for it.
And how was it? Did you find yourself, you know, I feel like for in my head anyway, you know, it's much easier, I think, to be naturally funny than to like be funny with a script. Is that true for you? Like, did that come naturally to you? Did you have to like work on it?
It depends on the script, I guess.
That's true.
Definitely. Yeah, it really does depend on the script. But, you know, we shot everything pretty much that was on the page. And then we also would improvise all the time. I mean, I had one of the most formidable scene partners in improv history, Taika Waititi. And he is, I mean, incredible. Like, what an incredible scene partner to be able to work opposite of him. And I mean, a lot of the stuff that I was doing actually was just playing the straight man to him and kind of, you know, the more I could treat him with just be really unaffected by the crazy charm that he has in this movie, the more it would kind of just land that this guy, you know, I really don't like this guy, and the audience really shouldn't like this guy either. So unfortunately, I didn't really get to do a ton of improvising against him, more just kind of looking at him like, what are you talking about? But it was amazing. I mean, working with him, and he's such a nice guy and such a giving dude too on set. So,
and
yeah, it was great.
Were you a fan of Ryan before doing this film?
Certainly. Are you kidding me? Certainly. Yeah. And that, I mean, I really remember the first day showing up and meeting Ryan and, you know, just kind of right away, he, besides being just disarmingly handsome, he's just very kind and, you know, kind of a quiet guy, sort of, and, you know, made it very comfortable, you know, and that's probably the most important thing, because if you're kind of uncomfortable on set, you're guaranteed to not do your best work. And I think he knows that. So it seems like that's the first order of business, is just making everyone feel comfortable. And I feel like a broken record, but he's really just like such a nice and great person.
That's awesome. And for you to have two, you know, caliber of talents like that, were you like a sponge just soaking up everything they were given, or?
Certainly. It was like class, you know. Just like you could just sit back and watch them work for hours, you know. They're really great at what they do. They have such craft, and they've got such experience in the industry as well. And that's something you can't get any other way than just by working in the industry. And I'm still relatively new, so it was really you know, formative being able to watch those guys and kind of really see what they're doing. And you know, it was really cool.
And obviously the series is a huge, ginormous success, but this is really kind of your first, you know, big kind of blockbuster starring role. Did that like leave you any, you know, were you like nervous at all about that, especially with, you know, talent like is in the cast or?
Yeah, dude, I was nervous the whole time. Yeah, certainly. Hard not to be, really. You know, everybody second guesses themselves and, mm-hmm. you know, so, but I, you know, when we got to actually just doing the work, it was, you know, it was fun. I mean, that's the thing about this job that, you know, I'm so lucky to do is that I just have such a great time doing it. And, you know, you get these cool opportunities where you get to watch someone's work your whole life and then you get to end up working with them. It's just really cool. And especially when the people are amazing. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. It is though my first sort of foray into doing like a big studio movie. And, yeah, I mean, I hope everything can be as fun as, you know, as this project was.
Well, you killed it. So, I don't think that'll be a problem in the future, but you know, of course. So finally, if you could live in a, you know, Free Guy type world, if you had that choice, do you think you would do it?
No. No, I don't think so. You know, the game that the Keys and the Millie character create and sell to Tsunami, the game is called Life Itself. That game I would live in. It's just like an idyllic, you know, utopia of, you know, technology and nature combined. That's beautiful, I think. But Free City would be too crazy. Too crazy for me.
No choice in skin for you.
No, I don't think so.
Joe, thank you so much, man. You were awesome in the film, and I look forward to everybody seeing Free Guy. It's so great, and you killed it. So thanks, man.
Thank you so much, and thanks for the great questions, man.
Oh, thank you, buddy. Talk to you soon. Bye bye. Great guy, talented guy, and I absolutely love his role in Free Guy, and I think you will too. So let me know if you've seen it. Tweet me at KMacMusic or at PopCulturePodCA, and let's talk about it. Okay, next up, I talk with Barbara Gordon herself. I'm telling you, you're really, really going to enjoy this conversation. It's very inspirational. Her story is very inspirational. So let's get into it. None other in my interview with Savannah Welch. I am here on iHeartRadio's Pop Culture Weekly, and I'm here with Savannah Welch. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Savannah. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So we're going to talk about you playing this iconic character on the upcoming season of Titans. But before we get to that, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back a little bit. You have an crazy inspirational story. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a couple of things about that.
Sure.
So you started as an actress and you you know, had been in like the Tree of Life and worked with Terrence Malick, and you had an accident that kind of, you know, for most people, I think would derail not only their life, but, you know, certainly their career, if not their life. Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Sure. Yeah. In 2016, November 2016, my dad and I and my son, who was 4 at the time, were at a farmer's market in a tiny little town outside of Austin, Texas. And a car lost control. A woman who was driving a car, she lost control of it, and she just sort of gunned it from about 30 feet away from me, from us where we were standing. And luckily, my dad and my son had just been by my side, but they had just both walked away within a feet from us, from me. And the car hit me, and I was auto pinned between her car and another one. My leg was mostly amputated on impact, and I was life flighted in a helicopter to the nearest Austin ER and had an experience in the helicopter that felt like I was dying, and sort of made a choice, what felt like it was a choice to come back. And then I came back and my leg, luckily, was all we lost. And it was kind of a freak accident, you know, at a tiny little farmer's market buying green beans on a Wednesday afternoon.
And I'm so sorry that you went through this. And what, you know, I have to ask, and if you don't, you know, feel comfortable, but I'm actually doing this, you know, didn't plan to say this at all, but I'm actually, my mom passed from pancreatic cancer a little over 3 months ago. And thank you. And I just signed a contract with iHeart, and it's actually not even announced yet, for a limited series, 13 episodes called Death, Grief, and Other Shit We Don't Discuss. And I'm taking from each episode is a, you know, it's from the diagnosis all the way to moving on and beyond. So there's an episode on the afterlife and there's an episode on death rituals. And so I'll be mixing her story with experts, you know, all over the country in these different fields. And actually one of them that I'll be talking to is a professor in Virginia. And he deals exclusively with researching near-death experiences. And I find that extremely fascinating. And is so I apologize for this derailment, but is that something that you feel like you had?
It is. And it's interesting because it's not something I talk about very often. I don't really bring it up as part of my story very often. And
you do not have to answer this.
No, it's not something that's difficult for me to talk about. It's just something I don't always know how it'll be received. And it's not something that I've really researched much. For whatever reason, I just kind of didn't seek out other stories from other people or researchers. I felt like I wanted to preserve it as the truth of what happened for me without influence in a way, you know. I think part of it, I felt sort of a little self-conscious, I should say, because there's aspects of it that sound very cliche, and maybe there's reason why it sounds cliche, you know, but I'm just kind of acknowledging right now that I rarely bring up that piece of my story, and for whatever reason I felt like that was something I should mention right now, having no idea about your your experience with grief and loss in this new show. But it's absolutely something that I would be willing to talk about and share in case, you know, it speaks to other people. I don't have a way to explain what I experienced, you know. It's not, you know, I guess there's a part of me that feels like I don't want to be perceived as somebody who has some answers to what might happen. You know, I don't even know if the same experience will happen the second time I die. but, you know, I know what I experienced that time. And you know, it might be totally different for everybody. I have no idea, you know, but
that's incredibly powerful. And thank you so much for sharing that with me. You know, again, I had no idea about this and you had no idea about this. So it's very interesting and, you know, fate or whatever is. But wow, what a powerful, you know, journey and life experience, and you have used that, you know, horrible circumstances, because obviously it's not something that just, you know, the experience doesn't just end once you leave the hospital, and you have taken this and transformed it into something for good. Which I think is, you know, so it's why, you know, I'm doing the other show, is because I believe, you know, in my heart of hearts that there's power in telling our stories, and whether one person hears it or 10 million people hear it, you know, if it can help that one person, it really, as cliche as this sounds, it really, really was worth it. And you are doing this, I mean, just openly and honestly and, you know, fighting for inclusion and awareness. Why is that so important to you?
Because of my everyday interactions with other humans, you know, and just how much I think our suffering can unify us really in a beautiful way. And I say suffering, you know, because, you know, I don't believe that pain has to equal suffering. It's usually when we're isolated in that pain that it becomes suffering, you know? And I just, you know, this is going to sound like a maybe vague answer, but I just feel like we're all so much more alike than we are different. And the more that we can discuss that and talk about it, and we talk about inclusion, you know, I always err on the side of inclusion. And in my life, or I strive to, just in kind of like even my social circles. And I just feel like that's sort of the path to like healing for everybody. You know, I know that when this happened, you know, there was a time when I was in a hospital and in our community, music community in Austin and in Nashville, where I'm from. There was a time where I kind of felt like, you know, I was trending in a way, you know, like this terrible accident, you know, was, you know, there was a lot of people that came forward to help and to be there and be present from my family and I. And that was all, you know, in a lot of ways, very genuine. And people who suggested, you know, that I get a PR agent and that I start almost like using this in a way. And I felt really just, you know, not even conflicted. I just felt an aversion to capitalizing on this in a way that wasn't genuine, you know? And so there was, you know, some press around it, but I just felt like I had to start at home. I had to start with how to integrate this new reality, you know, in my own body and in with my family and the people around me. And that took some time. And then after that, it was like, what are some real positive ways that I can try to reach people and share my experience in a way that's not coming from some sort of like ego-driven, you know, capitalizing on, yeah, I guess in a way that would be more. So I like have to ask myself those questions often, you know.
Yeah, and it I can imagine that it is a delicate balance sometimes where you feel, you know, I thought about this greatly with this, you know, with the new series. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to be capitalizing on my mom's death. But, you know, she was the one, she would want this. I know that she would want this. And, you know, she was the one who always urged me, you know, tell your story and help others. You know, her whole thing that she just beat into me my entire life, you know, beat into my head my entire life was help others, you know, do what you can to give of yourself, to make the world a better place. And I know that I feel torn sometimes because I'm like, you know, I want to be open and honest and authentic, but I also don't want it to be not creepy, but like you said, kind of capitalizing on it. However, mm-hmm. You know, this is a vehicle that I have that hopefully can help other people. You know, for me, I told iHeart, you know, I want this to be the show that I need for me right now that I can't find. And so hopefully that can be it for somebody else. And it seems like, you know, this is very much that for you in so many ways.
So many times, you know, I've stumbled upon someone who wrote their story or shared their story, whether it's a book or a podcast or a person, sitting in front of me, that, and it's been pivotal for me. And usually that is someone who is having the courage to be vulnerable, to be honest, to share a part of themselves that maybe they're not totally proud of, or might not be in a perfectly packaged way yet, or, I think that, I'd like to think that I can give back, because I've received from other people too. And it's just an exchange. And I think what you're doing is exactly that.
Thank you. And I feel the same way for you. I mean, you are, not just an advocate, but you are an example. And I was talking to this, she's so awesome. She's on Broadway, and she was the first person in a wheelchair to star on Broadway as a lead. And she's just such a bubbly person. And she was saying that, I've never seen someone like me do this. I've always wanted to be on Broadway. And it's almost like it wasn't possible. And she, through her, not only advocacy, but through her action, has now made it possible for anyone else that wants to do that. And that's, it's the same thing for you. I mean, you are playing Barbara Gordon, this iconic, character with decades of history that is such a role model for not only women, but men. And here you are, doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I really had to, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of reckon with the ways that this disability would affect my work, the opportunities that I would be given or not given. There were a lot of jokes kind of at the beginning passed around about, pirate movies and, war films and, practicing how to walk on a peg leg just in case, a period piece came along. And I don't know, and humor is always so helpful for me, but, no doubt I wonder, what about the roles that I'm either not offered or, and why that is. And of course there are going to be characters that I just cannot play, and I can't, there's plenty of things I cannot do anymore. There are things that I also don't have to take personal in that. And I will say one thing that was really unexpected was that I would be given opportunities such as this, that I wouldn't have otherwise had access to. And so for that reason, I just felt so honored and grateful, and really, I guess honored is the word. Barbara Gordon is such an iconic character, and there's so many fans who have, grown up loving this character and looking for this character as somebody who represented the disability community in the media, one of the few characters of that, a woman in a position of power. There's so many reasons why I now understand why this character is so well loved, in all the incarnations. And it was cool. It was very cool and such an experience.
How did it feel first getting onto set and being Barbara? Was it kind of like an out of body sort of thing where you feel this weight of decades of history behind this character, or were you able to kind of, put it to the side?
Well, by the time I got on set, I'd done a lot of preparation for the role. I'd gotten to have a lot of conversations with the showrunners and the writers, and really felt like I had an understanding of this woman. Of course, it's totally, you know, brand new experience when you get on set and you're in the GCPD office or you're in the main manor, you know, that part of it is, it was really cool, you know, and you get to kind of drop into that world. So, you know, as Barbara Gordon, that part, you know, I feel like we kind of, I learned more about her as the season went on and was able to kind of, like create more and more depth, I guess I should say, to her story and who she is and what her experience in life is as somebody who is in this new position of power, newly disabled, her history with Dick Grayson and what that is, you know, and finding that dynamic with Brenton was really fun. So, yeah.
I love it. And it's, you know, I've always imagined, as a, you know, if I was an actor stepping into a universe like that, and I feel like it would almost be like a, you know, like going to like Hollywood or Universal Studios or something, you know what I mean? Where it's like you're in that world all of a sudden, for, you know, all intents and purposes. And, you know, it's got to be exciting as well to, you know, to know that you are the version of this character now, you know what I mean? You are Barbara Gordon.
Yeah. I'd like to think so. You know, there's, I get to be a version, I should say. You know, there's been others who've done a beautiful job too. And, but there's, she's close to my heart for sure.
And how in, you know, your career, you've played, you know, you've done like character sort of studies and now playing like Barbara. Is this just a totally different experience as an actor? Do you find it more difficult? Do you find it just the same?
It's just different. You know, there's quite a bit that was already established about this character and her story and her background. There's different interpretations of it. You know, that was one thing that was kind of a challenge, was choosing, you know, there's different, different versions of her history and kind of, you know, all of us collectively deciding, okay, we're going to go with this version, or we're going to go with this. And about, this is kind of what the time span has been, and taking what already existed and sort of making the choices to lock in those details and to also embellish and bring more information in about who she is and, you know, her personality and what are her weaknesses, what are her strengths. And, you know, yeah, it's totally different. In some ways it's nice because somebody's kind of giving you like, here's the story, it's already done, you know? But also there's a little bit of, I don't want to say pressure, but the it's almost in a fun way, I should say, there's some pressure, but the challenge to honor that and to do it justice, you know. So I know, you know, a lot of the DC fans are really invested and they care a lot and they know a lot, you know, and so. So that was part of it, and I wanted to make sure that I did her justice for the fans.
I love that. And what, you know, as spoiler free as possible, what can we expect from Barbara, you know, in this season of Titans?
Yeah, let's see. I have like my little spoiler sheet here what I cannot share. It gets intense.
Okay.
It's intense on a few levels, you know, personal and professional. You know, the history between she and Dick Grayson, it runs deep and there's a lot there. There's a lot of shared life experience between the two of them and partnership. I think there's probably some heartbreak too, and a lot of love. And so the two of them kind of working out what their dynamic is and, you know, as a partnership, that's pretty unbreakable. You know, they work well together and always have, and they know each other really well. As far as the romance there, it's a journey. It's a little bit of a journey this season, and it gets heated. There's a lot of action. She's not a huge fan of superheroes being in Gotham. You know, I think that she pretty much believes that they perpetuate the violence with the villains, you know, and that the civilians are sort of caught in the balance between that sort of cat mouse game, you know? And so she's got to, you know, eventually admit she needs them and that they need her too. And so, I'm trying to think of some fun kind of juicy spoilers, but you might just have to watch it.
There you go. Savannah, thank you so much. You, as I said, you are just an inspiration. And I can't thank you enough for sharing your story, not just with me, but as you have been, you know, sharing it with the world and continuing to be hope for people and inspiration for people. And you have so many things going on. You're a musician, you have a podcast. Like, where can we, you know, keep track of all your gigs?
I'm not playing live music right now. I hope to get back to that soon. COVID depending. And the podcast isn't launched yet either. You know, I don't know. I'm way up in the mountains right now in Northern California with my family, and we're about to go to Hawaii to visit some friends. So I'm just kind of like getting locked back in step with my kiddo and, you know, normalcy of life. Not to say off the grid, but that's my focus at the moment. I don't know. I'm on all the social things, Instagram and Facebook and all that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll have all your links up, and I can't wait for Titans to come out. And please, your next project, come on back, and we'll keep on talking.
Awesome, man. Well, good luck on all of your endeavors, too.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Savannah. I told you. Did I not tell you? She is so inspirational. She's honestly she's just amazing. And I really love her point of view. I really love her perseverance. I really love her strength and grace and her talent. She's so great as Barbara Gordon in Titans. And I know a few of you have hit me up about Titans. And so this one, I think you guys in particular will especially love. So let me know what you think about my interview with Savannah. Hit me up on social, at KMac Music on Instagram and Twitter, at Pop Culture Pod CA on Twitter. All right.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Next up, the one and only. She is so funny. I am in love with her. Laurie Tan Chin.
Hi, Kyle.
Of course, I absolutely love the show, and I absolutely love your role as Nora's grandmother. And I've got to say that, in many ways, she reminds me of my grandmother, my mom. And I have to know, is this a character that you have based off of somebody else in your life?
Oh, yeah, it's a conglomeration growing up, of grandmothers of many races of while I was a kid playing around the neighborhood, there have been grandmas who have had, the hump in the back and, you know, they still, if they can't even look at the grandchildren, they can just yell and they know where they're at. Greek yayas, mm-hmm. you know, the Italian grandmas. So I gather a little bit from everybody. But my main upbringing, there was an auntie that was very, very wild, and she was outspoken. And so she and another one were their main outspoken characters that I grew up with. So
I love that. And she sounds incredible. And do you find any of yourself in the character?
Sure. You know, when you're working a character, you just have to, it becomes a part of you too. It becomes a part of me. So, yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you find that a series like this, where it's, you know, you have a theater background and you've been in film and TV and theater, do you find that it is easier or more difficult when there's not a physical audience in front of you, particularly with comedy?
I never listen to the laughs, so I'm not aware. When I do a theater piece, it's like surfboarding when you ride the wave. When there's laughter, I don't hear it, but I can feel the vibration, you know. And just when it's peaking, then I can enter with the next dialogue, something. So that's all I know, is that I never hear the laughs. So it doesn't hinder. And so that when I'm filming, it doesn't matter if I hear, but I always hear those tech guys tittering. I mean, they tell me that the handheld cameras are shaking a little bit from laughing. So,
and it's got to be a fun show to work on, you know, with the talent that all of you, you know, the cast brings out in each other. Is it, you know, is this one of those jobs that is like a, you know, fun and exciting to go to every day, and you're using your, you know, creative juices?
Well, number one, it was created by Asian Americans, Awkwafina and Teresa and Shell. And that is very important, because it's from, you know, they tweak each one of the scripts and they analyze it to see, you know, what will fit. So it is very important, because it is from the influence from an Asian. That's a big deal. You know, I don't have to shuffle around or, you know, do the bows that are totally unnecessary in past projects that I've been involved in. You know, we don't have to talk about a stolen jade vase, mm-hmm. or some kind of tea or something like that. And that's the only purpose of our existence on the episode of the TV or the stage. It is very freeing to know that we have somebody on our side. Awkwafina's right there in the scene. If it doesn't feel like it works, after I stumbled quite a few times or something on something, she'll say, cut that, and we move. We just continually move. And it's very freeing.
I absolutely love that aspect of it too. And as you're saying that, you know, my mom, who passed away a few months ago, she absolutely loved Korean dramas that she would binge on Netflix, I think it was. And she had no idea what they were saying, but I swear, and it was especially through chemo, you know, she went through chemo through 2.5 years. And by the end, she was like, you know, speaking words in Korean. But as you were saying that, it made me think, there really aren't, that I can think of right offhand, there really aren't any mainstream, you know, casts that are primarily Asian on, you know, in English television, which is horrible, except for this series. So it's, and that kind of just hit me, you know, how important that is for representation for people, you know, not just like me that love a great comedy, but for other Asian Americans to see themselves represented on, you know, screen.
Oh, well, it's particularly important and pretty sad, you know, that we had nobody. We'd occasionally see Anna Mae Wong in the oldie movies, every once in a while there would be somebody on the screen, but you know, there was no show except the first one was Mr. T and Tina that I recall, with Pat Morita, Pat Suzuki, and June Angela and her brother Gene Profanato. And then it came All American Girl, or as a few other ones that didn't really last long.
Yeah.
Still, to grow up with no role model, and until Bruce Lee came, and he became a role model for a lot of men, mm-hmm. you know. And so this is a long time coming, especially when it's written by the hand and influenced by the hands of Asian Americans.
Absolutely. And, you know, as much as, you know, there is this heartbreaking, you know, plague going through, you know, many Asian American communities right now with hate and violence and all. But on the other side of it, you have a series like this. You have a huge Marvel Studios movie coming out in a couple of months that, you know, is almost totally an Asian cast. So it's kind of a duality in many ways. But it's, as you said, it's well past time.
Yeah, I have a friend who recently passed, and he was 89 years old, Alvin Ng. He had opportunities on the Broadway stage with the Stephen Sondheim musical Pacific Overtures. Mm. But, you know, I saw him struggle. He's, you know, a few years older than I. And we all struggled in a time when there was only one job and only one Asian that would be cast in the role. So I, you know, think back on his life and how we used to have odd jobs. You know, we made flower arrangements in terrariums, you know, to for $5 an hour or something. And mm-hmm. I worked plenty of bread and butter jobs just to exist. The jobs weren't far and few, and nobody wanted to represent us. So not like now, you know, the young kids basically do not have to walk the pavement, knock on doors like I did in my youth. My young years.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's due to people like you that are blazing that trail for them, you know?
I kind of wish that they had some kind of, you know, experience, because it really, once you've walked the walk, you can feel the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't handed to you. You really know how it feels, you know?
Absolutely. Laurie, thank you so much. You are an absolute delight. I love you. I love your character. And thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Take care. What did I tell you? I knew you would fall in love with her too. She's so funny, so charismatic, so smart, and she's just a gem. Awkwafina is Nora from Queens, is out right now. Go see it. All right, that is our show. We have some exciting things for next week's episode. Let me just give you some clues. The Night House, little movie called The Night House, and a little show coming up on Hulu called 9 Perfect Strangers. Just some hints for ya. All right, so I will see you next week. Thank you so much, as always, for being amazing. I love you. I really do. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for letting me in your ears. It sounded weird, but it's true. All right. See you next week. We out.
Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Weekly. Hear all the latest at popcultureweekly.com.
Thank you for letting me in your ears. Kyle, sometimes I really, really wonder about you.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.